Many calculate the war in Afghanistan is already the longest in American history, but even after a decade of combat operations, there are persistent questions about whether the United States can arrive at a satisfactory resolution to the conflict. Here for an update on it and on the fallout from recent incidents that have inflamed Afghan public opinion is Washington Post reporter Craig Whitlock, who covers defense and foreign policy for the paper. Welcome to our show.
Thank you for having me.
In the last few weeks, members of the U.S. military have burned Qurans. An American soldier has massacred 16 Afghan civilians, and a video has circulated online that shows service members urinating on Afghan corpses. Has that led to a sense in the Pentagon that the war effort is not going well?
That isn't what they say publicly, but of course, you know, this is really bad string of news over the past few weeks for what is going on in Afghanistan. It's interesting that all these events, really none of them have to do with the Taliban, with the enemy. It has to do with actions by U.S. or NATO personnel, by their Afghan allies. You know, these are, as you would say, self-inflicted wounds, unfortunately, but cumulatively, they're having a particularly negative effect on public perceptions of what's going on there, both in Afghanistan and at home.
Just late last month, the Pentagon was saying that our fundamental strategy in Afghanistan was still sound. Are the recent incidents forcing military leaders to rethink that?
They're still saying that, at least publicly, but of course I think they're watching to see whether public concern about these incidents will blow over, particularly in Afghanistan, or if they do need to make adjustments to their strategy. I mean, certainly, you know, it's reasonable to ask if this alliance with Afghan National Security Forces is going to hold up. The whole underpinning of the U.S. strategy in Afghanistan is to train Afghan forces, security forces, so that they can take over responsibility for the war by the end of 2014. But when you have repeated incidents where trust is being violated in the most egregious ways, whether it's the Quran burnings, the urination videos, this massacre of Afghan villagers on Sunday, or the killings of U.S. soldiers, including two officers who were killed at point-blank range in the Afghan Interior Ministry last month, you do have to wonder how long is that trust going to hold.
So there's mistrust on both sides, but we're not linking any of these things to each other, are we?
Well, we don't know. They have not been explicitly linked to each other, but we don't know the motivation for a number of these incidents. We don't know what led to the execution-style killings of the two U.S. officers at the Interior Ministry, but that happened shortly after the Quran burnings. It happened shortly after the Marine urination video, so certainly tensions were at a high level. And with this shooting incident in which 16 Afghan villagers were killed over the weekend, we still don't know the motive of that soldier, why he did it. The United States military has not identified him. They said he admitted to it, but they haven't said why he did it. So we don't know if they're linked or not.
Has his name been released yet?
Not yet, which is unusual. It's been 5 days now. They have not released his name. They've moved him out of Afghanistan to Kuwait.
Which has outraged people in Afghanistan.
Yeah, that has not made people there happy. I think there are some Afghans who have called for him to be handed over to their government for prosecution. You know, that was never going to happen. There's a legal agreement between the government of Afghanistan and the U.S. That stipulates that the U.S. military would handle any disciplinary or criminal proceedings against U.S. forces. That's pretty common. But there were many Afghans who were saying, well, the U.S. military should charge him, have him court-martialed in Afghanistan so that people there could see what's going on, that it would lead to a transparent process. But it doesn't appear that's likely going to happen either now that he's been moved out of the country.
But what's the logic in moving him out of the country? If you want to apologize to people, don't you do it in front of them?
Well, I don't know. I think you're talking about two separate issues, an apology and where you try somebody. You can hand out military justice, have trial proceedings and charges in the war zone. That's pretty common. But for serious crimes such as murder, that's something that is generally done back home. It's more complicated of a case of interviews and takes a while to put together. Usually they bring people back to their home bases to do that. We've seen that before in Iraq and Afghanistan. So I think that's not that uncommon to bring him home. The question is, why is he in Kuwait? How long will he be there? I suspect that's a temporary measure.
U.S. Defense Secretary Secretary Leon Panetta is in Afghanistan at this moment. What's on the agenda for his meeting with President Hamid Karzai?
Well, actually, that just wrapped up today. He met with President Karzai earlier, and Panetta has left the country. He's now elsewhere in the Middle East, in Abu Dhabi. He had a meeting with President Karzai to discuss some things immediately on the agenda. The United States and Afghanistan are trying to come to sign a memorandum of understanding about the presence of U.S. forces after 2014. And there are some sticking points with that. One thing is that Karzai has complained for a long time about the night raids that are carried out by U.S. and Afghan special operations forces. This is something that's very unpopular in the countryside. The U.S. says they need to keep doing this to fight terrorism and to apprehend insurgent leaders. The Afghans say, you know, it's an invasion of their privacy, obviously, and is a real sore subject with them. The other thing is the basing agreements. To what degree can the U.S. military remain on bases, and who's going to be in control of them after 2014?
Well, President Karzai has demanded that the U.S. military pull back from combat outposts and confine troops to bases. Is that likely to happen?
Well, we don't know. I mean, that was a bit of a surprise. After his meeting with Panetta, the presidential palace for Karzai put out that statement saying he wanted U.S. troops and NATO troops to pull back from these combat outposts, which are small camps out in the countryside or near villages. And the reason he did this is in response, direct response, to the massacre over the weekend, that the soldier who's accused of doing this had been posted on a remote combat outpost in a rural part of Kandahar province in the south. And so I think what Karzai is doing is saying, okay, enough of this. We need to reduce the direct contact between the U.S. soldiers and these villages. So he's saying they should pull back to larger bases. Now, of course, this undercuts a key part of the U.S. counterinsurgency strategy, so I don't think the U.S. military or NATO is going to be keen on that. Again, I think it's something that Karzai can't force them to do, but will be something they'll keep talking about.
Will we be relying on private security firms in Afghanistan after we start pulling back some of the troops?
You know, that's a very good question. That's another sore point that Karzai has made clear, that any private security firms have to be registered or overseen by the Afghan government, not by the U.S. government. And he's taken steps to make that happen. And aid groups and non-governmental organizations are concerned about this. You know, who's going to be in charge of any private security? Who are they going to answer to? And that, again, is another work in progress. I think, you know, the military will always rely on contractors to some degree, but, you know, that's an issue I think that's going to predominantly affect a lot of the aid groups that are going to be working in Afghanistan.
There was a major security breach when Defense Secretary Panetta arrived. And as you said, last month, two U.S. service members were fatally shot inside the Afghan Interior Ministry. Is there a sense that nowhere in the country is safe from an attack?
Well, that's a really good question. The U.S. military has been downplaying these incidents, saying they're isolated, but more details just came out today about the security breach involving Panetta's visit. Sounds like it was a lot more serious than the military had originally acknowledged. They said today that this Afghan carjacker who had stolen a truck was trying to ram it into a group of VIPs who were gathered on the runway on the parking position, waiting for Panetta's plane to park. And so it was just moments after Panetta's plane had landed, this assailant drove the truck into the group of VIPs. He didn't hit any of them, but they had to scatter. While he was doing this, he ignited himself on fire somehow, and sounds like he was also trying to ignite some canisters of gasoline in the truck. Fortunately, none of that went off. The VIPs weren't hurt, but it was very close proximity to Panetta, happened just as he was arriving, and was a real close call.
I'm talking with Craig Whitlock, who covers defense and foreign policy for The Washington Post. We are talking about it in the light of the recent situations in Afghanistan that have complicated the American presence there. President Obama has pledged to end U.S. combat operations by 2014, but even then, should we expect that a U.S. military contingent would remain in the country? And has anybody talked about how big it might be in the light of what happened with Iraq?
Well, that's what they're talking about now, and I think there are some similarities with what happened in Iraq. We may not know till close to the end of 2014. The U.S. commanders are pretty clear that they say there needs to be some U.S. military presence after 2014, whether it's primarily special operations forces that'll be on counterterrorism missions, but also to advise and train Afghan forces. That's what they would like to see. I think the Afghans are amenable to that, but that's something they're trying to hammer out now, some sort of framework, a legal framework that would establish rules and procedures for a continued U.S. presence. I think the question is also what happens between now and the end of 2014. President Obama and Secretary Panetta and others have, frankly, given some mixed messages as to when U.S. troops and NATO troops will be handing over the lead combat responsibility to Afghan forces. Panetta said he thinks that will start next year. Obama seems to be supporting him on that, but some in the Pentagon have said that, well, no, American troops will still be involved in direct combat operations for at least two more years. So that's something that's also in flux. What exactly are the Americans going to be doing there between now and the end of 2014?
And should we assume that the U.S. drones will continue to be flying over Afghanistan even after there's a withdrawal?
I think that's a fair assumption if, again, the U.S. and Afghanistan are able to come to a legal agreement for the continued presence of U.S. troops. Surveillance drones and other flights, the manned flights for surveillance purposes, are you know, a key part of the military's ability to figure out what's going on in Afghanistan. What you don't see generally are, I think it's sort of a misperception, you don't see drone strikes in Afghanistan. If there's going to be airstrikes, are usually carried out by pilots and regular fighter jets. What we have been seeing, of course, all along are armed drone strikes next door in Pakistan against Al-Qaeda and Taliban targets. And how long that will go on is anybody's guess.
Well, when the United States withdraws, Pakistan will probably fill much of that vacuum, won't it?
Well, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, that's the question. When the U.S. withdraws, when will that be? I mean, they would like to keep a presence on bases after 2014, and they'd like to keep that ability to keep flying missions, even if they're covert, over Pakistan. You know, the Pakistanis have given mixed messages over whether they would like the Americans to continue doing that and for how long. So we'll see. Again, something that's going to be debated internally behind closed doors an awful lot for the next few years.
Now, relations between the Karzai government and the Obama administration have been straining for a while now, and we've even heard some terrible things said about Karzai by diplomats through WikiLeaks. Have these the current situations made them worse, or is this just more of the same?
That's a good question. I think there's certainly been a strain on the relationship with these recent incidents. They certainly don't help. At the same time, I think the personal relations with Karzai seem to be holding up. I mean, he certainly rightfully complains on behalf of his people when, you know, innocent civilians are killed, the Quran is burned, you know, these sort of things. And, you know, he's even the Americans acknowledge that he's right to be angry about it. I think from the presidential palace, one thing that is help from their perspective is that the Americans have been pretty quick to apologize in some regards, or at least acknowledge the severity or seriousness of some of these incidents. You know, they aren't trying to minimize them. They acknowledge that the Quran burning was a horrible mistake, even though they said it was inadvertent. Even this massacre on Sunday, you know, you've heard the president say that it was as if American children had been murdered. And so they've been much quicker and in much stronger terms taking responsibility for these incidents and also decrying them. And I think, you know, I think the Afghan government appreciates that, and Karzai in particular. So we haven't heard of personal tension between Karzai and his American interlocutors like we had in past years quite so much, but who knows what's going on behind the scenes.
There was a report in today's New York Times that conjectured on why the burning of the Quran set off widespread protests and violence, while this massacre of 16 civilians by the U.S. Staff Sergeant has not. And the Times said, after more than 10 years, many deaths and billions of dollars invested, Americans still fail to grasp Afghans' basic values. Is there really that big a disconnect between the two countries?
I think there's always a disconnect. The cultures are extremely different. Even though the U.S. has had a presence there for 10 years, you've had, you know, military officials, State Department officials, you know, they rotate out very quickly. You know, usually they spend a year there, a few months. You don't have the long-term presence of the same people. You know, it's a very different culture from ours, and it takes a while to get to know and to speak the language. And we don't have many people who have been there for 10 years. So I think that's always a concern. I think the Americans are getting better at it. But, you know, you're never going to, I think, have an equal understanding of how the two countries would react to incidents like this.
Well, have these recent incidents changed the status of the negotiations with the Taliban? Because they seem to be using it as part of their propaganda war.
Well, of course, as you would expect them to, the Taliban did put out a statement today saying they're suspending all negotiations with the Americans, which have been taking place at a very introductory level in the Middle East, in the state of Qatar. Now, again, it's a little unclear if this is them trying to make propaganda out of it. You would expect that they would say something like this, or, in fact, is this dashing any hopes of negotiations or a peaceful settlement with the Taliban? Some analysts rightfully point out that, you know, what motivation is there for the Taliban to hold serious negotiations at this point? Things aren't going well for the Americans over there. They know they're going to withdraw. So it would seem that the incentive is not very high.
Now, a new poll found that a majority of Americans, 54%, want the United States to get out of Afghanistan. Is public pressure changing the Obama administration's thinking about the war?
Well, they say it's not, but of course it's something they take into very close account. And of course,
it's an election year, isn't it?
So it's not something that they're going to ignore or close their eyes to. Now, to what degree that's forcing them to reassess their strategy or take other approaches is something they're discussing and debating at the White House and inside the Pentagon right now. We'll see how that pans out in the coming weeks.
Craig, thank you so much for talking with us. Craig Whitlock covers defense and foreign policy for The Washington Post.
Glad to do it. Take care.